Hi, welcome to the Berry Nation podcast, where we support the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. I am Jason, and you just got me today. April's having power issues, and Natalie's doing family stuff. So today I'm just going to be welcomed with Rob at My Weight Is History and Nikki at Modern Mom VSG, two of the most amazing people in our community that continue to inspire and help spread the word for hope and hope for a better tomorrow in our community. So we appreciate you both for being here.
Thanks for having us, Chase.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So today we're doing berry parenting. So parenting comes with its own unique challenges and roadblocks, but when you add your own bariatric journey into the mix, things can get pretty interesting. So today we're going to be doing, we want to know, you know, how or if your parenting has changed because of the bariatric life and how you prepared your children for surgery. We also want to know, you know, how did you talk with your children about obesity and bariatric surgery and your body just as a whole? So, Nikki, if you want to talk, just introduce yourself and tell people a little bit more about yourself.
Sure. My name's Nikki. I'm Modern Mom VSG. I am 41 years old. I live in near Seattle, and I've got two kids that are 9 going on 10, actually going on 17, let's be straight, and 8 years old, two little girls. And I struggled with weight my entire life. I got meningitis when I was almost 3 years old. And the medication to save my life just damaged a bunch of things in my body. I'm half deaf and my thyroid was out of whack. Just everything was changed since I was 3 years old. So I just struggled with obesity my entire life. And then when I was 38 years old, my mom actually took me into a surgeon consultation. And she said, like, I just want you to save your life. So that's how I looked into bariatric surgery. I struggled with it my entire life, and I'm very, very conscious of health and wellness with my family because I don't want my kids to go through what I went through. I see a lot of similarities in them as with me in terms of their personalities and their tics and their, you know, how they deal with anxiety and things like that. And I just am very, very conscious of promoting health and wellness for my family.
Yeah, it's completely understandable. I know we hear a lot of times throughout the community and things of how people have really changed the way they approach parenting, you know, after surgery as kind of they did before. If we're lucky enough to have kids before we had surgery, a lot of things shift for us as far as focus goes on that. So,
yes.
Rob, what about you, sir?
Hey everyone, I'm Rob, aka My Weight Is History, aka Dad Rob. So I guess that's how I got put on the panel. But essentially, very similar to Nikki. A lot of this was because I have a family that I care about and love about greatly. When I got to my highest weight, my oldest daughter Allie was about 5. My youngest daughter Stella, or no, Allie was 8, Stella was 5. And essentially, I just realized, like, I was going to die at the rate I was going. I was told by my pulmonologist I was essentially asphyxiating myself. And I realized that even though I struggled throughout my point with my life, that I wanted to have a better life for my kids and I wanted to be around for my kids and my wife. So that's kind of what was my impetus for surgery and why I'm so passionate about making a fulfilling family life for myself moving forward.
Well, and that's awesome, you know, because you put a lot of it, you know, both of you guys put a lot of your family lives out there for everyone to see, because it's, you know, there are people that want to keep those things more private, but it's good to see the other side of it too, because that lets everybody know kind of how the inner workings of things go for people that, you know, if you're somebody who's struggling or thinking that you surgery may not be for you because of the family, because you have, you know, so many changes and you don't want to kind of rock the boat. But it's good for people to see that you can do it and make positive changes and really take it all the way and have the success like you two are doing. So it's really good. I think it's amazing to see you guys do it the way you do.
I think it's important that we show that dynamic of everything, because as much as bariatric surgery is your journey, your family really is along for the ride, and so much of that dynamic changes. It's not something that happens overnight. I always joke, We did a really good job. My wife is the great communicator out of the two of us, surprise, surprise. But she really made sure that my children knew when I was going for surgery that this is a simple thing. Daddy will be right back. And in true fashion, when I came through the door after my surgery, my youngest Stella looked at me and she said, "Dad's still fat." And that was, you know, that's always the greatest thing to hear right after you get home from bariatric surgery. She kind of looked at me. And if you have young ones, yeah, nothing more rewarding than that. But, you know, I think when you have young children, there is a thought that when you have the surgery, you know, that you're going to come home from it and all of a sudden you're going to be a buck 85, which I still haven't hit. But it's one of those that you have to constantly communicate with your kids. You have to constantly communicate with your wife or whoever's, you know, in your unit that this is an ever evolving process. It's not an overnight thing that you can hit.
It definitely is not an overnight thing. And it's your journey, but your journey involves your family. Your family is your why, and they are part of your journey. You have to include them in your journey. I actually didn't tell my kids about it. We didn't tell them that I was having surgery. I was, when I first had it, I was still in the space of like, it's not going to work. I was in that doubtful space. And I think there was a part of me that was kind of ashamed too, that I was having weight loss surgery. I'm 3+ years post-op, and back then we didn't have Bari Nation. We didn't have a huge like support system on Instagram. There wasn't this community that is now here of like this huge support. And I felt very alone, and I didn't want to kind of set myself up for failure or set my kids up for failure, if that makes sense. So I didn't tell them. And I actually regret doing that, because as I started to lose the weight and as I started to make these changes, questions would come up from my ever inquisitive, you know, then 8-year-old. She's very savvy and she's very smart. She asks questions that I'm not always prepared to answer. And so when she would ask certain questions, I was like, oh, now I've got to be truthful. And I should have been truthful in the beginning, because it really is your journey. Your family is going through it with you. And if you don't include them, it's going to hold you back and it's going to hinder you. You have to include your family. You have to include your spouse. You have to include your kids, because they want you to be successful and they're part of your success. And I don't think I realized that till a couple of months after my surgery.
But you know what, Nikki, I think it's what you really touched upon that was nice, is the fact that it is really tough. You know, there is a level of shame and guilt of everything we've gone through before. And we don't talk about that as much when we're posting to social media, but you know, a lot of us will all have that same why of we're doing it for our kids and for our family. But there's also that great fear of what if this fails when I'm doing this for people other than me? And it's one of those things that I constantly struggle with, is what happens if the weight comes back? What happens if, you know, I fall off? And it's something that fuels my fears. Not only that, is what if I'm not a success in front of my wife and kids? So I totally get why for a lot of us, we choose not to bring it up until we see the results, or we have to find that critical spot where we feel comfortable to come out and tell people that we've either had the surgery, are going to have the surgery, or, you know, that we're 9 months out and we've had the surgery.
Well, and that's true too, because we, you know, if you think about it in the realm of all the diets we've had before, all the things we've tried, all the things we've done, you know, there has been a point of failure at some point. So the shame kicks in, the things like, and so that mindset is not something that's easily shaken. Like, you're not just going to, you know, wave that off and go, oh, well, this is different. This is, yeah, this isn't like Weight Watchers. This isn't like any of the other stuff I've done. This is totally different. So this is going to be fine. You know, those things still are so prevalent in our minds as we move forward through the journey. It's always that way, because you hear of regain, you hear of people gaining all their weight plus some back. I mean, there are the people that, you know, that have left the bariatric compliance area and it has gone, you know, badly for, and, you know, you don't want to, you know, nobody wants to be that person. And especially when you've gone out and told everybody what's going on, you know, because for a lot of people, this seems to be the last stop. Like, this is it. Like, you get this one shot, this last shot, you got to hit it out of the park, or otherwise, you know, it's all a shambles. But in reality, this is just another tool that we've had that will, you know, that we can continue to build upon to try to, you know, do the best we can to have the most successful journey. And I think talking to the people around you that you know, including your why in your entire journey is just helping you to do that, because they're going to be your cheering section. They're going to, you know, when you look around and you're, you know, like you, Nikki, you're 3 years out, you know, when you get to that point and a lot of the NSVs have stopped, a lot of the, you know, the big milestones are gone. Like, you've already passed all those things and you kind of look around like, well, what's keeping me going? And it's that cheering section. It's your why that you, you know, that sticks in your head. And that's what you want to look around for. And, you know, they're going to keep you motivated to go because, you know, as we've talked before, motivation is fleeting. Nobody, you know, it's not going to come to you on the couch if you're sitting at home hanging out. And all of a sudden you're not just going to be like, well, I really feel like I want to go work out now. Like it's, you know, it's doing those things in repetition is what creates the motivation to continue going. So that's, those are good points.
Now, Jason, like, what was it like for you? Because your children are slightly older than ours. What was it like for you when you decided to open up that conversation? What did it look like?
Well, they had heard my wife talking about it because she was the one that kind of did the research first on it. And they were in my same kind of thought process of you're not traveling to Mexico to get cut on. Because we didn't know back then. They're just like, you know, not like Nikki said, there was no Berry Nation. There was no, you know, there wasn't the information out there. So we, you know, she was just like medical tourism school. I had a couple friends do it and they're doing great. And I'm like, yeah, but that's your friends. This is you. I'm worried. Like, I'm concerned here. Like I have a genuine connection here that I'm not trying to let go overseas. But, you know, to me, talking to them about it, they kind of knew with what, you know, the research that she had done. So when we started talking about it, they were truly concerned for me because I was, you know, way heavier and I was really having all the health complications. So there was a lot of that in there.
Were they teenagers at that point or they're already like grown adults when they?
No, my son was the youngest. My daughters were 24. And I had my grandbaby or one of my grandbabies at the time. Or no, I guess my second grandbaby was just a baby at the time. She was only a couple of months old, but yeah, they had all, when I had started talking to them about it, they were on board because they knew they had seen firsthand all the health complications I was having. My mobility was next to nothing. My son was 17 at the time. And, you know, he was the one that we were actually on the college tour for when I realized that I just couldn't keep going like that because I wasn't going to make it. And my doctor at that point, when I had come back from that tour and kind of explained to her what was going on, she was like, yeah, you know, based on your labs, based on what's going on, like you are actively dying at this point. You are yourself at 44 years old. You are probably not going to see, you know, 50 plus, like those aren't going to be in the cards for you. And so I knew that, you know, both of my daughters not being married, my son just, you know, barely getting ready to go to college. Like I knew I was going to miss out on a ton of things had I continued to go that route. So in talking to them and kind of, you know, my wife was of course already on board because her insurance wouldn't give her the surgery. So she had to wait a year anyway. So I went ahead, my insurance did. So I snuck mine in there after I figured out what was, you know, what the real was about it. And when I had it, everybody just, I'm one of the most fortunate people in the fact that not only did I never have complications through, you know, post-op, anything's been great. I have had the most supportive system around me even before we started Berry Nation, which is one of the reasons we did, is because I was fortunate enough to have not one person in my entire family, friend group, anybody that was trying to talk me out of doing what I did. Like there was like 9 people at my job that had it and been successful with it. So I was able to talk to them about it. That's how I knew our insurance was so easy, like easily accessible, that the process was legitimately like 3 months long and I was in for surgery. Like they're just great about it. So that for me was amazing in the fact that I had so much support that I knew once I started hearing people say that they didn't have support, I knew that I had to create what I had for other people.
And that's amazing to see how much that's grown and developed. And I think it's similar when you hear either your story or Nikki's story. You know, at all points when you're a parent, whether your children are young or older, there's still like a little bit of an anxiety when you have to have that conversation and confront the people you love and trust the most and tell them not only do you need help, but this is what I'm looking to do. And having support of people there or having someone in your life that's cheering you on is so important. So.
And the conversations are so different with like little kids who don't really understand versus like adults or teenagers that are fully understanding of what's going on and are aware of the health issues versus like the little kids. I mean, my daughter, we have the Amazon Fire Stick and it has the photos, you know, sometimes. And I think it was 3 or 4 months ago and it was photos we're doing. And she looks at me and she goes, Mommy, are you ever going to look like that again? And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, well, back when you were like, I don't remember, but back when you were fat, right? Are you going to look like that again? She still doesn't really understand. She doesn't really understand like kind of what happened there, they don't really process it the way that older children might, right? And so the conversations are just so different, I think, with each age kid. And I think it's really important to just have that honest conversations, and so that you can have that support system or build your support system and let them be supportive of you as well. But I think it's really cool that like your kids were super on board, because there's so many people out there that whose families are like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, why would you, like, and they don't have that support, and their families almost like try to talk them out of it. So I think it's, you know, kind of cruel in a way, because they're just trying to do something for you and save your life in a way. Right. And so I think it's really cool that your kids were like, yeah, dad, I want you to live. Like, that's awesome.
Well, and it really was helpful, because you do hear like, yeah, it's the same thing that we always talk about. Like, you wouldn't shame somebody that needed a triple bypass. You wouldn't, you know, shame somebody that needed their hip replaced, like to be mobile and move around. Like, oh, just walk it off, grandpa, you'll be fine. Like, you just, it's not the way, I mean, it's not the way of the world. So, I mean, it really was like, my father was the only one who didn't quite understand. Like, for him, he's 72. So all he remembers is like the lap band and people dying, and more, you know, the morbidity rate was like very low at that point. And so he was just like, so you're going to go get, you know, the band put around your stomach. Like, isn't that going to kill you? Right. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm like, we're so far advanced here now. I was like, here's what's going to happen. I gave him the whole rundown. I sent him a video, everything. And I was like, look, man, I was like, they're doing these like, you know, like a pit, like you get your appendix out nowadays. So, I mean, it's cool. Like, you just go in, like, it's almost outpatient at this point. They've got it down to a science, like it take like 30 minutes. Like, and I kind of calmed him down about that. It took a couple of times of him asking, you know, kind of going, wanting to go over all the info again before he was really comfortable with it. But it's seeing the results that really, you know, everybody's so super happy about. Cause when you could tell them that, and my dad has a ton of health complications, not specifically related to weight, because he never really was that big. I mean, he's like 6'1", and he's the highest he's ever weighed like 280. And so and even now, I don't even think he weighs 220. I don't think now, but he, to him, to know that all my labs were coming back normal and I was off of some of the meds and all that stuff, you know, it to him, that was music to his ears. That was all he needed to know, was the fact that, you know, I was cool, like lab wise, like metabolically, I was good. And that's what he was really concerned about. And once he saw that and saw the fact that I could move around so good, and all those things really helped him to kind of bring it all to, you know, have some closure in the deal.
Yeah, but have you really lived or had bariatric surgery until you tell someone you've had bariatric surgery and they tell you how their aunt's cousin's mother's sister's best friend's neighbor not only got the lap band back in 1987, but now they're like 800 pounds and they vomit every 2 minutes? Like, that's how you know you've arrived in the bariatric community, is once you like start to trace that lineage of the rando that happened to have it that they saw. So, you know, I think it helps when you kind of communicate to your family and to everyone about how that works and how that's not how it was and what you're doing to build your life around it. So,
yes.
My mom was the one that took me to the surgery consultation. She actually lied to me, told me we were going to Home Goods and then we pulled into the hospital, and she was like, we're actually for a consultation. And I was pretty pissed. I was like, Mom. And she was like, Nick, just please like check this out. Like, please. I'm like, this is like a last resort. This is for like 600 pound plus. This is for like those, the TLC show. Like, what is, no, Ma, like, I'm not doing this. And she's like, just please for me. Like, I don't want to bury you. And I was like, oh, geez, Ma, you're so dramatic. But she saw me going down the path and she knew that my blood work was not coming good. I was approaching 40. And she was like, it's going to go downhill from there. She saw me struggle with the kids, you know, my weight, be sideline mom and all that. And so now she's now 9 years sober from alcohol. She every year for Christmas gives me her chip. And every year on her birthday, I give her my blood work, like panel basically.
That's awesome.
Especially that's cool. The diabetes part, because that comes through in our family. And so every year, like I give her, like since surgery, I give her my it's like a little thing I print out for her, and it's where my level is normal. And she always cries every single time, just like she gives me the chip. So we kind of help each other in that way. But I think, you know, we all just are rooting for our parents and they're rooting for us. And it's kind of awesome when your parents finally get it or your family members get it. And they're like, oh, this is actually really cool that you're doing this.
And I think something that's really powerful that I can take away from that story personally, Nikki, is if I just tell my wife we're going to Home Goods, I can abduct her and take her anywhere. And I've never really thought of how easy that is just to say we're going to go to Home Goods. And as long as I'm driving, we can go anywhere with that.
I was pissed. I was like, Ma, you lied to me. And she was like, how else was I going to get you here? I'm like, hands down, right. But I was really looking forward to Home Goods though. I was.
Yeah.
I mean, she could have at least taken you after. I mean, that could have been like your treat for going and sitting through the consultation. but that really is beautiful though, that you guys connected in that way, because you're both sober basically at this point. You're both going through the same transition of sobriety from, you know, your weight, her sobriety as a whole. And you guys are able to follow each other's journey in that way and have that connection is really beautiful. That's kind of like an offshoot of your why that you can really hold on to and connect with in a real time situation. You know, the kids in there, you'll always look at them and know that was your concrete why, but having that connection with your mom too, that's really amazing.
I think it's great. You know, you look at it that, you know, as parents ourselves, we also have the relationship from our own parents that we develop and work. And it's making sure that you keep those strong, you know, connections through everything. So that's awesome, Nikki.
Yeah. So with you guys, what would you say, Rob, what was your parenting style before you had your surgery?
Oh, I was absolutely negligent. I was one of those people who, I was probably the biggest kid in the household prior to surgery. I made a lot of behaviors where I would justify whatever and almost pout and fight worse than my own kids. It was one of those of, I work X amount of weeks, I deserve to have the extra large pizza by myself. It's, I work 80 hours or I'm balancing all this, I deserve to spend X amount of money. And when looking at it as prior to bariatric surgery, my kind of approach to both finances and parenting was kind of like, let it happen, see what happens. But like, I just really want to keep hitting the dopamine dump of that instant gratification for me. It was one of those things that like, I kid a lot. I was very blessed that between the pandemic and surgery, it really did lock me in with my kids. And it really did give me a chance to reset so much of my behavior and everything else about how I'm going to show up for my wife and kids during that point.
You're coming up on 2 years, right, Rob?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2 years and like 2 weeks. So, surgiversary coming up.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you. What about you?
My parenting style before surgery, I was always very focused on health and wellness, always, but in more of a frustrated way because nothing worked. So then I would fall off wagons in a deep, big way. And I would just do the justification, just like Rob said, like justify things like, well, I tried this and didn't work, so I'm going to do this. Or I've had a bad day. There was a blowout or there was a, you know, temper tantrum or there was whatever. Right. And so I would justify habits based on those, but I was always very active with the kids. I always kept them very active. And you know, we always had like kind of healthy foods all the way around, but I don't think that I really honed in on how to make it work because I was doing the justification all the time. And I was more lax, I think, on food than I am now. And not that I'm strict on food, but we have more parameters because my kids are very athletic, especially my oldest. She's extremely athletic. And we really focus on what's going to make you feel good. And I don't think I focused a lot on that prior to. It was kind of like, yeah, sure, whatever. Like, as long as you eat something healthy, then go have whatever you want, because that I was doing that. So then why shouldn't they? Whereas now the conversations are bigger about like what fuels your body. Like, you have basketball in an hour, like what's going to make you feel good for that game versus like what's not. And so I think that my parents' style before surgery was just, I don't know, just more relaxed around food and stuff like that. But it was not relaxed because I was easygoing. It was relaxed because I was making bad choices.
I think one of the other things that I really struggled with is I grew up where food played such a role in a household. You know, in case anyone hasn't figured out, I'm Italian. So we literally use food for everything. You know, food is comfort. Food is joy. Food is for everything. So celebrations were something that was always surrounded around food. Someone dies, you know, you bring food over. It was always that food level. So one of the things that was really revelatory to me is when I had to completely rehaul my relationship with food, I did not realize how much as a parent I would justify if my kids had a bad day, like, yeah, we're going to have, you know, extra cheesy mac and cheese. Or if they had a really good day or full report cards, we're going out to eat and we can get like two appetizers or something else. And it's alarming when you realize that you're doing that and you're kind of mimicking or showing your children these patterns or behaviors. And it's been something that I still struggle with. Even to this day, I'll catch myself a lot of the times of justifying a good or bad day for my kids with, okay, well, we're going to use food as our soothing mechanism, and realizing that I have to change that behavior still, even 2 years out.
Yeah. And like food was a very big part of my growing up as well. I'm half Italian. My dad was Italian. My maiden name is Falcone. So we were like very like, you know, Sunday dinners and lasagna. I have a rule. If you want my lasagna, you have to get cut some way, whether you cut somebody or you have surgery. That's not my business, but like if you got cut in some way. But food was celebrations and big pasta dinners. And my husband's British and he's like, Sunday dinners are roast and potatoes. I'm like, no, that's Tuesday. Sunday is lasagna, cacciatore, piccata. Like, come on. Like that's Sunday dinner. We always like love like a lot of that food. And we don't do that anymore. We don't do like big Sunday dinners. We just have pasta night because it's pasta night, not because it's a celebration or it's a reward or whatever. It just is. And I think that changing that mindset coming from a culture that is very food focused, food is love, like to many cultures, and you could still show love through food, but how do you change showing that love and why?
Yeah, it's one of those fun things. We're going to go down the Italian road for a second, Jay. So you gotta hold on one. But I have a 92-year-old Italian grandmother, and I always talk about how she's one of the best trolls that are around. She doesn't have the internet, but she knows exactly how to push buttons. So like growing up, it would be one of those things where she'd be like, Robert, you're too big. She would put out a metal folding chair because she wouldn't let me into good furniture at one point because she was worried I would break it. Like, that's a real story. But it would also be the same one where she'd be like, what do you mean? You're only having two meatballs. Yeah, well, what are you doing here? Yeah, and like literally heaping pasta on the plate. And then if I didn't have thirds, she would be like, well, I guess this was the worst meal I ever made. So like there's certain things and behaviors that you pick up over the time that you kind of have to change. So it's one of those of we still have our Sunday dinner, and it's one of those that we portion it out and we bring the trays, the plates over. And we just don't push, you know, when someone wants seconds, that's fine. But also, you know, we're not pushing on seconds, thirds or fourths when we go through that. But it's taking the importance of the love around food, but reshaping how does that look to fit a healthier lifestyle.
100%. And saying like a lot of the times my kids would be like, I'm full, or like, do I have to finish? I'm like, no, you do not have to clean your plate. Like my dad was always like, you need to clean your plate. Like you do not waste food. And I think that was all of us grew up with that kind of a culture, right? We don't waste food. And my daughters are always like, well, do I have to finish this? Or like, I don't want to eat all of this. It's like, just listen to your tummy. But if you are still hungry in 20 minutes and you want ice cream, then you should probably finish that first. Like then you just are gravitating towards the sugar. Like we always say, listen to your body. Are you really full, or are you just wanting to get to the next thing? Or do you just not like that? Like, what is it that you're not, why are you not eating that? And so on and so forth. And sometimes they finish their plates because they're starving. And sometimes they just take three bites and they're like, and we're done. So I think, you know, not pushing the food is a huge, because there's so many of us that grew up with, you gotta clean your plate, you gotta eat, and you gotta have the seconds or else it's an insult. And you gotta also even have the thirds. And just like having that conversation of listen to your body, listen to your stomach, listen to your mind, like listen to like where you are while you're eating, and don't stop watching TV when you eat. Like my kids are like, they'll just do this. I'm like, no more TV when you eat. Like you need to eat and enjoy your food, and then you can go watch TV. Otherwise it's just like mindless. And before you know it, like you've eaten like three bowls of cereal. Did you really need three bowls of cereal?
Is there any greater joy though than going through the hunger cues of a 7-year-old where it's literally at 4:45, I'm starving. I've never seen a meal before in my life. Why do you not feed me? You know, like just put UNICEF rice in front of me. I need food. And then literally you pack out this whole entire meal that's delicious, nutritious. You do everything. You're like, here, good, eat. And then they put like a hummingbird's beak worth in their mouth. Like it's not even an ounce. You couldn't put it on a food scale and make it where they're like, I'm so full. So then you're like, okay. So then you pack everything up. And I swear it's like the last Tupperware lid shuts and I shut the fridge and all of a sudden it's like, you have no idea how hungry I am. And it's like that roller coaster of just learning to parent of, here's the deal, this is your meal, I don't care when you eat it or how you eat it, it's starting at 5 and it's not ending till 9, and maybe you get dessert, maybe you don't, it doesn't have to be clean plate club, but don't tell me that you're like, you're starving and only ice cream will cure you. So
yeah, that's we've got the grandbabies now. We went and picked them up last weekend and we have them until 4th of July weekend, and that's they're 3 and 5, and all they know is snacks. And we went to Costco, we got some snacks, we got, you know, the majority of healthy stuff. And now that's all they want. Wake up in the morning, oh God, I need a snack. I'm like, nope, we're having breakfast. Like, what do you mean breakfast? I don't want breakfast. I just want a snack. I was like, no, we're not snacking all day long and never having a meal. We're going to have breakfast. Then later, if you want a snack, we can probably knock out some, you know, some fruit snacks. Then a little bit later on than that, we're going to have lunch. And then if you want snacks after that, we'll figure it out. But that's legitimately just because they know they're here. They just, that's all they want. They see the boxes and they're just like, oh, I gotta have that snack. I need it. And it's, you know, it's telling the 3 and a 5-year-old, you know, trying to reason with them is, yeah, it's ridiculous. But, you know, we're making our way through, because my daughter, it was funny when we picked them up, my daughter's like, you know, I never understood when you used to say, you know, you just want it because it's there, because you know it's in the house. And she's like, and now I fully understand, because they will do that all day long if you let them. And I'm like, oh yeah, no, we don't play that over here, because I didn't play it with you, so I'm not going to play it with them either. But, you know, what both of you guys were saying about kind of how the things that you do were kind of patterning onto your kids. I did the same thing with my just gross amount of things that I used to want to try to eat. And it was bad on the level of, you know, the just everything for me was just the, if it was a ridiculous portion of something, I had to try to eat it, even though I know I was eventually going to fail and not do it. But it was just the attempt to me of wanting to try to do that. And my wife says I used to watch food porn, which was competitive eaters and things that would just eat like ridiculous amounts of servings of things to beat these challenges at these restaurants. And I had gotten to a point where that I watched that stuff on YouTube a lot, and she would make fun of me for doing it. And she's like, that's disgusting. And I'm like, no, what are you talking about? It's cool. Cause he's like, his whole 72-ounce steak, and then he ate the potato and the salad. And it was a whole thing. And so it didn't click to me until after I had had the surgery. My son, who was 18 at the time, saw some challenge on TikTok, or I don't remember if it was TikTok or Facebook or whatever, but it was like 10 McDonald's cheeseburgers in like a 5-minute span or something. You had to be able to eat all 5, you know, all 10. And he came home with this bag, and I'm like, what are you doing? And he was like, no, I'm going to try this thing. And I'm looking at him like, what the hell? Like, why would you do that? Not thinking that I'm the one that, like, he watched me watch this stuff and try this shit over the years, and never, it took a minute to connect. But what's worse than that is while I was watching him do it, I'm pissed critiquing the fact that I can't do it myself, because I would have crushed it, where he failed out after like the third or like 3 and a half cheeseburgers. And I'm like, you're doing it all wrong.
Come here, let me show you how to do
it. Yeah, I'm like, 2 at a time, smash them down and like kill them. Like, you're not even doing it right. And I'm mad because I'm post-op and I can't do it myself. And that's when it really clicked to me. I'm like, dude, you got a problem. Like, this is not okay. Like, A, it's not okay that you even, like this kid even knows that this is the thing and to even try it, but that it came from me. And I've got these feelings, these emotions tied to it. Like, I should be able to do that, because I would kill that challenge. Like, God, that's nothing for me.
And I think one of the biggest eyes is when I was really big, my good buddy Tom we would go and like, he would see if I could do like the cheeseburger, like 10 pound burger challenge. And like, I failed on like three or four of those, like over the course of 3 months. And he was just like, man, you're not even the good type of fat. Like, you can't even win us a free meal. Like, I have to watch you fail at this. And then we struggle. Like, you need to get better. And he's my best friend. So it's not even from a bad point, but it's like, could you at least win us a t-shirt once when you try to do one of these? And he's like, this is just sad.
Oh my gosh.
No, I used to say that all the time. I'm like, I'm not even a good type of fat where I can eat all the things. Like, I'm not even that, like, it's just not that way. But yeah, no, that to me was a real tipping point for how I needed to adjust how things, like how I approached all that stuff after, you know, that was a big change for me. What have you seen change for you, Rob, since you've had surgery?
Oh, everything. You know, it's one of those that since surgery and everything else, I've been really, really conscious about what goes on my plate, what goes on my family's plate. I know I always freak Jason out, Nikki, when I do this, but like, I keep a Google calendar of every meal we're going to have for like 3 months out. So it's one of those of
just barely meal plan for a week.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll send you the link. It's disturbing. It's literally like the Ark of the Covenant. Like, April fell out of her chair when we did the first time.
But yeah, so I make sure you're sitting down when he sends it to you, because it's a lot.
Yeah, but the good thing is, like, I spend the summer like scouring all year for the like eat this, not that food recipes. We're like, here's a healthy way to make chicken piccata. And it's like, I'll try it, and it's gotta pass a 3/4 rule in our household. So 3 of the 4 members of our family have to actually enjoy the meal, and then it comes into the rotation. If it's 2, then it usually doesn't make it, but it's small things like that of making nutritious meals that my family likes, so that there isn't this association of, if we're eating healthy, it's boiled chicken and broccoli, and that's acceptable, if that makes sense. So it's simple food switches from that. It's the activity level too of, you know, taking my kids out to the park so much more, running around with them. One of the saddest points I think I had throughout this entire journey is I didn't teach my oldest daughter how to ride a bike until last year. And then, like, she's 9. And she didn't ride a two-wheeler until she was 9, not because she didn't want to, but because I physically could not run alongside with her. And she was really frustrated when I taught our youngest Stella, you know, a year later, how to ride a two-wheeler. And I legitimately had to sit her down. And that was probably the toughest day I've had post-bariatric surgery, was having to explain to her that I physically could not be a good parent to you before, and that I'm being a better parent to your younger sister. And like, that keeps me moving. That, like, every day that keeps me driving, because I realize I lost so many prime years with my children. So yeah, total buzzkill. Nikki, how about you? What's changed?
Same, everything. I mean, same. I mean, I focus a lot. I'm able to do a lot more with my youngest and give her more of me than I did my oldest. Same, because I just didn't have the energy, capacity, care, ability. Prior to my weight loss surgery, I had 3 knee surgeries on my right knee. And so I was, you know, I couldn't run alongside. I still can't run alongside them, but I now am able to. Like, I shouldn't run because of my knee, but now I'm able to, and I'm not set back for days on the couch with the ice pack and things like that. Like before, where I would try to do something with them physically, my oldest would just be like, no, mommy, it's okay. I don't want you to get hurt. Whereas now she doesn't say that to me anymore, but it took her a little while to like not say that to me. My youngest has just never said that to me. She doesn't remember me trying to be active with her and getting hurt. And same, I didn't teach my kids how to ride a bike either. I left that up to my husband. He was just physically more able to, and he's not a thin guy. He's a bigger guy, but he's not, you met him, Jason. He's active and he's fit. He's overweight, but he's not obese. Right. And so he was just always able to do more with them, or I thought he was able to do more with them because I held myself back too. And so I didn't teach them that kind of stuff either. And it kind of sucks. So I feel like now I'm so aware and conscious of trying to teach them things now and spend more time teaching them positive things now, because I didn't prior to, you know. And one of the things during the pandemic we did, when they were home, is they would just like back to the snacks, like snacks all day, snack, snack, snack. I want a snack. I'm like, I am not a short order cook. stop asking me for a snack. And then I was like, you know what? I need them to learn how to listen to their bodies. Like, how do you teach that? It's so hard to teach. So I went to the dollar store and I got a basket for each kid. And in the morning, I would put a basket full of snacks. The snacks that were like kind of approved, everything from pantry to fruit to piece of cheese, the rounds that we have them make. Like, you can get 5 pantry snacks. Absolutely. But did you make your rounds first? Did you have a fruit? Did you have something from the fridge? Protein, make your rounds. And if you're still full, do the round, or still hungry, do the round again, and then go back to pantry. You can have 5 fruit chews, but you have to do this first. But anyways, with that basket, they would, at first they eat the snacks, like right away, 9 a.m., eat them all. That's the snacks for the day. So they had to like kind of learn how to space themselves out a little bit. And then also learn, like, I don't want this snack right now. It doesn't make me feel good and things like that. So that really, I think the awareness to teach has changed post-surgery, where I don't think I would have done that pre-surgery. I may have approached that snack pandemic situation differently pre-surgery, but.
Yeah, I think if you want to see impulse control at its worst, you should have seen me take my kids to like the grocery store at 365 pounds. Like, it literally was like all the Oreos, dump them in. No, take your arm through the shelf and shovel them in and see how much we could get. Like, literally the grocery store looked like it should get type 1. My cart should have type 1 diabetes by the way you went out. Like, it was literally all the cookies, every piece of candy, the impulse buys on the ridge. It was like a question of, hey, who here can actually beat their high score first? Like, my kids are like, well, can I have something in the checkout lane? And I'm like, you know what? I could have one too. And, you know, it's like, hey, we're not going to tell mom if we all have 2 things out of the checkout lane this time. And it was just, it was an abject failure. Like, it's not setting up for success. Now, when we go to the grocery store, it's, they each get to pick 3 healthy items that they like, because I think it's important that you stress this idea that your children should know not only what's healthy, but get healthy things that they like. Mm-hmm. So they get 3 healthy things and then their splurge item. And that kind of helps them pack what they're going to have for snacks, what they're going to have for lunch now that they're back in school. But that's been like a really big fix to actually watch their logic of how they pick and what they choose and how they discuss.
And it gives them a sense of control too, right? That's all the kids want. It's like a sense of control. We grew up with diet culture, and where we were given the food, we were told what to eat. We didn't have the choices, right? And then when we did have the choices, it was bad stuff, right? So I think teaching them to, you can totally have that ice cream. Absolutely. Everything in moderation, right? But like but what do you like that's healthy? It's, I think changing that conversation to the health and wellness is key for the change in Berry parenting lifestyle. Like, that's the biggest change in our family, is going from, you know, not talking about food in a healthy way to now we talk about it all the time, and food is the forefront of many conversations in this house, but in a different way than how we grew up.
Well, and your trial by fire, by letting them have the snacks and blow through the whole bag at 9 o'clock in the morning, your whole basket's empty. Then you got to, you know, sit the rest of the day with no snacks. Like, that actually is a way to let them know that you're teaching them moderation and portion control and how to kind of gauge it out and, you know, and pace themselves in that way. And you're not doing it in a harmful way, because you're also making them make the rounds and do the thing. You know, that is actually a really good way to teach them, you know, not only that moderation that you're talking about, but the healthy versus non-healthy, and having those conversations is extremely important.
You're coming back out for summer. Trust me.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. How long after your surgery did these changes start happening? Was it immediate or did it take a little while?
For our family, it took a while, just because I wasn't honest with my kids at first. Like, my changes were immediate. You have to, right? You're post-op, you are on liquids and you're on, you know, purees and stuff like that. But then I think including my children into that took a little bit more time, because again, I was like, this isn't going to work. I don't think it was until I like had lost 50 pounds. I was like, huh, this is working. I'm changing my life. I need to include them a little bit. So it took me a little bit more time.
Rob, what about you?
I think it's trial and error and evolution. Nikki, I know our oldest are both at that 10-year-old stage. So no matter what, I get a solid C- score, no matter what I do, you know, according to her. But I think it's trial and error. And I think the most important thing that if you're a parent and you're still listening to me at this point, but it's just don't quit. It's keep trying to figure out what works for you and what works for your family. Something that might really be revolutionary that I'm doing in my house might not work in Jason's and might not work in Nikki's. And just the same as, you know, something that Nikki does, you know, it's, you got to just keep trying and have an open communication line with your wife and kids. And it's probably one of the toughest things is like, now they're to the point where like, Dad, we do not need to hear about macros anymore. I'm not doing macros. I'm like, no, you need to understand like protein is key. And they're like, I just want to have a chicken nugget. So it's like finding that balance is so important as a parent because, you know, I think when you're a parent, your sole goal is you think like, well, what's going to come up in therapy when they turn, you know, high school age. So I'm constantly thinking of how am I traumatizing my kids and what can I do to be better? So it's like, just try to find balance and moderation and find something that's a healthy and positive relationship with food and the relationship with your kids.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would you both say are some Berry parenting wins that you've had post-op?
I'll go. I think the fact that my oldest daughter will tell the kids in her class that we buy off-brand and we buy healthy is always a good thing. So I've taught my kid how to buy food in a grocery store on a budget, but also healthily. I think is a big win. The ultimate goal I think every parent is going to is how to buy the proper amount of produce. Which still doesn't work even in the summer months. So it's you either buy too much or too little. But that's ultimately the holy grail that I think we're all going for as parents.
That's true. I think a huge like Berry parenting win since surgery is, I think just the lifestyle change. Like I'm just able to be active with my kids. My kids, the fact that they don't think about me getting hurt when I go to the park with them or like run with them, or we take family walks and they don't have to stop and, you know, mom, is your knee okay? Like, I think that's a huge one just because we're a very active family, and I did not being a sideline parent, I think is the hugest win post-surgery because I always hated being on the sidelines. And I love now that I'm more active with them. I mean, I don't play lacrosse with her. I'm not that active, but like just the fact that I'm able to, when we walk to school in the morning, sometimes when it's not raining here in Seattle, which is never. So when we do walk,
the 4 days a year,
I mean, it's pouring right now and it will for a decade. I mean, it has for a decade. So it's just never, the sun never shows up here, but when it does, and we do walk to school, we were running late one day and Harper looked at me and she's like, Mom, should we run? And Portia goes, yeah, Mom can run now. And so we ran a little bit. And like the fact that she was like, yeah, we can, her first thought wasn't, no, we can't run. We can't let mommy get hurt. The fact that she was like, yeah, we can jog a little bit. Mom can jog too. I thought that was really cool. She didn't hesitate. So to me, that's a huge win. And I'm not sure they remember much of me prior to, because they were so young and it was 3+ years ago. I don't think they remember a lot. So I think this is just now their new normal.
That's a good way to put it too, because my kids and grandkids are kind of the same way. Cause when my grandbabies lived with us, I was still pretty big. And would just admit, I would work in the, I'm still working from home. So I would work in the living room. When I got done, I would log out and I would immediately walk right back to the bed, lay down, turn the TV on, and they would come cuddle up with me and just lay there. And they knew that that was just the routine to do at 4 o'clock. It was time to get up and go lay down. And anytime they would come in the house, they would immediately come back to the room and go, where's Pop Pop? You know, cause that's where I would be laying down. And now they don't do that. Because like one time they came in and I was up doing something and they didn't see me and they ran back to the room. They're like, oh my God, where's Pop-Pop? He's not in his spot. And that really kind of hit me to a point. I'm like, I need to be up. And like, they don't need to see that. That's their only thought of me is like, I'm the lay down guy. I'm the comfy guy that they can come curl up on and go to sleep. And now that they see, like, I'm able to go up, get up and do things and I'm, you know, pick them up and run with them and play in the backyard and do all the things like that. To me, letting them see that side of things is better than the alternative and just knowing me as the, you know, as the comfy lay down guy. So that's been amazing for me. And of course my kids, you know, get to go do things with them and them knowing that I can move around a lot better now. And like, I helped my daughter move into an apartment and did basically almost all the whole thing by myself and was able to do that. I almost loaded the whole truck by myself and she just was, you know, in awe because I hadn't been able to barely move around hardly the last time she had seen me. So it was good for them to see me in both lights. So it was, that's kind of been the win for me.
I remember we got our trampoline like 6 years ago, and it's from Walmart. It's not one of those spring free ones. It's like ones we grew up in the '80s, but it's still got the ring around it, the safety protection, whatever thing.
We've come a long way.
Right.
Here's a small screen that somehow lets a mosquito through, but nothing else. You know, but this will totally keep you safe from a piece of rubber that you're just going to bounce up and down on 8 feet.
100%. We got that 6 years ago, and there's a weight limit on it. And prior to surgery, I was not able to go jump on there, because if I went on there and then had one of my kids on there, we were over the weight limit and I was afraid of breaking it. So about a year post-op, it was summertime and the girls were jumping, and I ran in there and jumped with them. And I didn't even give it a second thought. I didn't even think about, is there a weight limit that we're reaching? Because I just didn't think about it. I just ran in there and jumped. And I remember thinking to myself, like, that's just so cool. Like, I haven't jumped on the trampoline since I was a kid, and now I can jump with my kids. I didn't even think about like checking the weight limit, because I wasn't going to get close to it at that point. So I just thought that was a huge win too. Just be able to do the things you wouldn't do before.
That's so awesome. And I still get like flat, I call them like the fat flashbacks, where it's like, when I see a weight capacity on thing, I just like start to walk away and be like, all right, kids, we're not doing this. And then my wife has to be like, you know, you don't weigh 365 pounds anymore. So it's awesome that to be able to share something that you did as a child with your children is so empowering. And the fact that you didn't even think twice about getting on, that's awesome.
Yeah. It was really cool moment. And I think that's like these little wins that we have post-op that we don't really think about until like after the fact, we're like, oh, that was pretty dang cool. You know,
like mine came yesterday. Mine came yesterday. We were with my grandbabies and over at some of my wife's like really good friends have an in-ground pool. It's basically an above ground that they buried about halfway down. But the ladder for that, I was always like, nah, they were like, aren't you?
And thank you, thank you for another episode of Welcome to Florida with Jason. Here's an above ground pool that we buried halfway underground.
So I'm laughing because I'm like, you know, they've had it for years, and they've always been, oh, aren't you going to swim? And I'm like, nope. I sit at the table and watch, because I'm there's no way I'm getting on that rickety ass ladder. I'm like, I'm absolutely not. Like, that is not for me. Like, I will destroy your ladder. I'm not going to be able to buy you a new one. Like, no, I'm not doing that. And so yesterday we took the babies, and they were just like, are you going to swim too? And I was like, and then I'm like, you know what? Yes, I am. So I actually got to get in there for the first time in year, you know, since they've had that, and actually got to enjoy it and spent pretty much the whole day, which is why I look like a tomato now, because I was in there for most of the day. So, but yeah, it just was, it was really cool to be able to, like you guys said, you know, not worry about the weight limit for once on something and be able to actually do it.
I remember when we were all at the retreat, Jason, at Disney World, we were all really enamored with the fact that like we can all fit in these rides together, and we didn't have to do like Peter Pan, for example, that would have been a single rider for us. And now we can fit two, maybe even three people in that thing. And to experience that without the kids was really cool, because then I'm looking forward to going back with them and doing that with them. Right? And having that win for me as a person, and then now sharing it with them in the future. But it's like those little things where you're like, oh my gosh, like we couldn't fit in this seat before. Like, I remember one gal was like, I've never ridden this ride because it couldn't fit on it. And I don't think a lot of people think of that. And that's not like a normal conversation that people have. And I think it should be a conversation that people have, because it there's so many people that struggle with these daily things that we do that to many people are just normal things, but we were held back. And now we're not. And to recognize that those are actually wins, I think is important, because they are wins, as silly as they may seem to other people in our community. They're so important to us.
Yeah. We fit three wide on it's a small world. And everybody was just like dumbfounded that we all could slide in the cart and we're just cool. Like it was really awesome.
I'm going to provide the counterpoint. The only reason I'd ever want to gain the weight back is to never go on It's a Small World. Like, I pray that the only regain that comes into my life is I hit just over whatever the weight capacity is on that ride. I got to tell you, I've been kicked off rides for my children, and that was a pretty depressing point, but I pray that I get kicked off It's a Small World. So
I send you the audio of the song.
I'm good. I'm super good. I'm super. It's already crawling into the back of my head, and already I know this is going to be the worst Sunday I've had. So thank you, both of you. This has been great.
I mean, you know, it's the least we could do for you, Rob, on a Sunday. You know, it's the gift that keeps on giving, and we just wanted to be the ones to give it to you.
It's a world of love and a world of cheer. Stop it!
Right.
So 3 weeks left of school. This is why I need my summer vacation, where then I'm trapped with my own kids as opposed to the taxpayers.
Yeah, all right, so to wrap this up, what are some of the recommendations for our listeners and watchers who are pre or post-op parents?
Communicate early, often, and consistently. And just know, just like everything else in parenting, at least for me, you're going to mess up. That doesn't mean to stop. It just means you got to keep learning and moving and adjusting. So that's my big takeaway. And don't go on, It's a Small World after all.
I'm going to just basically mimic what Rob said. Like, I mean, I regret not telling my kids before surgery. So I think honesty and communication, including your family in your journey. And if you have members of your family that are not supportive, like still have those conversations. Like, it's just really important to have your family included in your journey, and the honesty around your surgery, I think, is key to your success. And fail. You're going to fail, and you're going to get back up, and you're going to try again, but let your kids see you fall and let them see you get back up, because we're trying to teach them to fall and get back up on that horse. So they need to see us as well, go through our struggles a little bit, and see us win as well. You know?
Absolutely. No, that's a very strong point, because that's the, you know, it's kind of how that whole thing works. Like, it's not about if you're going to fail at something. It's when that failure happens and how you bounce back from that failure that's really going to resonate with the kids and kind of teach them going forward how to pick themselves up and move forward in whatever they, you know, whatever they reach in their journeys along the way. So if people want to follow you guys, how do they find you on the interwebs?
I'm Modern Mom BSG on Instagram, and then I have a TikTok, but I really don't do anything with it yet. So that's TBD, that's coming.
Nice.
Rob, what about you? I'm at My Weight Is History, and TikTok scares the ever living daylights out of me. So I'm not going. I did it for like 30 seconds, and the kids at the high school I teach at, they showed me it, and I'm good. I'm right where I need to be. And you know, this is where you got me. So.
It's just reels on steroids, Rob. That's all it is. And you're
going. Oh, I thought I knew reels, and then I see these things, and I'm like, oh dear Lord.
I know, it's so bad. My 9-year-old, she turns 10 in a few weeks, and she's like, Mom, I want to get a phone. I'm like, no. Like, hey, who you calling? You 10? Like, who you calling? She's like, no, I just want to watch TikTok. I'm like, hard pass. No, you are not getting a phone so you can watch TikTok. Absolutely not. So we'll do TikTok videos with her, like. We'll just do like those fun dances or whatever, but then we don't post them. And she's like, oh, are they posted? I'm like, absolutely not. But did you have fun?
See, I threaten my oldest with TikTok. I'm like, I swear I will join. And not only will I tag you in these reels, but I will also tag your friends, and I will destroy any joy you have on the TikTok. So also call social media by what it's not named. And it pretty much ensures that your kids think you're too old to enjoy anything. So
that's very true, because you called it the talk take, and that's great.
Exactly.
All right, well guys, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate that. You guys, your time is appreciated, your knowledge, your, you know, everything you guys bring to the community is just amazing, and we can't thank you guys enough. We also thank the community, because without you guys, you know, we wouldn't be where we are. You know, your support helps us, and anything that we can do to help you guys, you know, we're always on board for. If you're also looking for an extra layer of support along your bariatric journey from experts, clinicians, and patients just like you, You can join the Bariatric Nation membership community. Our support groups are led by bariatric therapists, registered dietitians, wellness coaches, and other clinicians that are weekly opportunities to connect with patients just like you in peer-to-peer meetups and live events. You can check it out. You have 14 days to try the community for free before the membership kicks in. So you can see if the support is right for you. You can also follow Bariatric Nation on Instagram at bari.nation for continued support aligned with your bariatric journey. You can follow April at @actively_April. You can follow myself at @_Smithsonian_. And you can follow Natalie at @breakingbarrier_ers if you know her handle. But it's amazing. Just the content, the things that we're able to create for the community, just it's just ongoing. And it's because of support from you guys. You can also continue to like, share, and subscribe to our YouTube channel on your favorite podcast player. You can leave us reviews. And on the Anchor app, if you listen to the podcast there, you can actually leave us voice messages that we can add to future episodes of the podcast. So we appreciate you guys for that. And then other than that, just remember at the end of the day, you've got this, we've got you, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, guys. And it's a small world after all.
It is indeed.